I'm Lisa Wexler, and welcome to this morning's edition of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Program. This award is given to bright high school students from around our region, from Fairfield County, Westchester County, Putnam County. It's sponsored by Accorda Therapeutics, a biotechnology company based in Ardsley, New York. And the judges are a panel of distinguished scientists and retired science teachers from around the area. I'm Lisa Wexler, your host, and I'm delighted to introduce you to this week's winner, Alexandra Rivera of Ardsley High School. Hi, Alexandra.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. So, Alexandra, tell us, what was your project? What were you trying to do?
So the title of my project is A Step in Understanding Glacial Flow, Exploring the Effects of Entrained Insoluble Debris on Mechanical Properties of Polycrystalline Ice. So essentially, my project was looking at the effect of small rock or dust particles in ice on the mechanisms of glacial movement.
Okay, so that we're going to break that down because that was a lot to say, and I appreciate that. So you're looking at glaciers.
Yes.
And when in people's mind's eye, they think of glaciers, they think of these blocks of ice. But in fact, glaciers are not really, they're not really slippy, slidey blocks of ice, are they?
No. They're more dynamic bodies. They form as snow accumulates and compresses over many years. And one unique property about glaciers is their ability to flow at Earth surface conditions.
They flow at Earth surface conditions. So let me tell you why I love this project, Alexandra, because actually, in my mind's eye, I could see what you were trying to do. You were studying rocks and debris that are part of a glacier.
Right.
When you think about a glacier in terms of your old social studies textbook, you don't see any rocks or debris. You just think of these huge chunks of ice as if they're icebergs.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Iceland this past June, for the first and only time in my life, I walked on a glacier. And it was all rocks and debris.
Right.
It was black rocks and debris.
Mm-hmm.
I had to wear pickaxe toe things, you know what I mean, on my boots.
Mm-hmm.
But so it was slippery.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that much ice.
Right, right.
And is that what most of today's glaciers look like, where there are more rocks and debris than they appear to be solid chunks of ice?
Yeah, so scientists have looked at the amount of debris coverage in glaciers, and they have found that typically glaciers towards the poles have more debris than glaciers in lower latitudes. But glaciers do not only have debris on the surfaces, like you were talking about, they also have debris inside of the ice, and that's specifically the type of debris that I'm looking at, and they also have debris below the ice.
Why is it important from a scientific point of view to look at debris in glaciers?
So sea level rise is a big problem in our world today, and in order to better predict and prepare for sea level rise, since glaciers are one direct cause, we must better understand glaciers and the mechanisms of ice flow. And glacier modeling is a very complex process, and in order to better understand it, we must isolate specific properties of glacial modeling. Like, for example, I'm looking at debris. So by better understanding the effect of debris in ice, along with other researchers studying different things, our research combined can come together to create a hopefully more comprehensive understanding of glacial modeling.
So we have this world that is warming up.
Right.
And when things warm, ice melts.
Mm-hmm.
Glaciers are essentially large coverings of ice.
Yes.
And to the extent we can figure out how rapidly they're going to melt,
mm-hmm.
we're going to know where that water goes and how far the seas and how and at what rate the sea level goes up.
Right.
So that becomes a predictor model for us to be able to plan as we're trying to adapt to global warming.
Yes.
Tell me, what was your hypothesis, Alexandra, with respect to this debris?
So my hypothesis was that increased debris in ice would quicken mechanisms of glacial flow.
That the more debris,
yes,
the faster things would melt?
Right.
Why was that your hypothesis?
So glacier movement is a combination of multiple processes. So one way that glaciers move is internally. So inside of the glacier, the ice kind of slides over each other.
Really?
But another mechanism of glacial movement is what is called basal sliding. So this is the process of the entire glacier sliding over the bedrock. So glacier movement is not only one way. There are multiple ways that it happens. So I was looking at the effect of debris on the two mechanisms. And so I hypothesized that an increase of debris would make the glaciers flow faster.
But why did you think that if there's more stuff in the ice,
mm-hmm.
that it would melt quicker.
All right. So previous literature have looked at, for example, one of the mechanisms of glacial movement that I was looking at is called internal ice deformation, or it's how the flow inside, how the glacier flows internally. So previous literature have found that ice with more debris or more rocks has smaller crystal sizes. And they have found that smaller crystal sizes flows faster.
Sure. I understand that. If you think about a chunk of ice like an ice sculpture at a wedding,
mm-hmm.
when you first get to the wedding, it seems like forever it's going to take for that ice sculpture to melt even a little bit.
Right.
But as it gets smaller, it melts faster.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing with the crystals.
Right.
And also, maybe, and I'm thinking about your hypothesis, the debris is non-ice by definition.
Right.
So it might be warmer than ice.
Mm-hmm.
So if the ice surrounds debris, if it's surrounded by something warmer versus the same coldness, it also might melt faster.
Yeah, so there's many different types of debris on glaciers. I think what you're referring to is the glaciers on the top of the surface. That's the debris that will be absorbing a lot of the sun's energy and therefore allowing the glaciers to melt faster. But other debris is not necessarily warmer. For example, if it's located at the bottom of a glacier or in the middle of a glacier, it's frozen along with the ice.
I gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So did you visit glaciers to do your research?
No, I did not.
You did not?
I really would like to, but I haven't yet.
So this is what was so great about your project. We're chatting with Alexandra Rivera of Ardsley High School. So you didn't go to a glacier.
No.
But you had this interest in glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do?
So I'm part in a science research program in my high school, and it's a 3-year course. And the main goal is to find a mentor in the field that you're interested in and work with them over the summer. So I found a mentor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, which is a research unit of Columbia University. I reached out to a mentor working in a rock mechanics lab, but she studies ice. So when I came
right up your alley.
Yes. So I came to her over the summer, and so typically science research mentors just have students tag along with their pre-existing work. But something that I'm very grateful for about my mentor is that she let me come in and kind of decide my own project. So she looks at ice specifically and like other planets, but my interest was glaciers. So she let me develop my own project, and she helped me kind of figure it out, how to implement the project. And so that's what I did.
Okay, but I think you're not giving yourself enough credit. Let's get going here. In the absence of going to a glacier,
mm-hmm.
how did you create an experiment that could give you a result about what a glacier would do?
All right. So something that is important in glacier modeling, in addition to simply going out into a glacier and looking at it, is being able to replicate it in a controlled laboratory setting. So that was the goal of my study. And so what my mentor and I did is we created our own ice samples, which was a process more than just freezing water in a bucket. It was a multi-step process. And the goal was to kind of create clear, bubble-free ice that we were able to image. So we created multiple samples. Some of them were pure ice, and some of them were ice with debris inside. So we put rock powder inside of it. And then we observed the ice crystals over time as they grew. And we compared the pure ice crystals to the ice with debris crystals to see if the presence of debris in the ice made a difference.
And how many samples did you use, Alexandra?
So this part of my study was conducted over 2 years. So in the first year, I looked at grain growth, or this is the growth of crystals over time, in pure ice and ice with debris. However, I was just getting used to the methodology, and the data I collected was not that strong. So the year that I came back, or this past summer, I repeated my methodology and improved certain aspects about it.
That's very cool. We're chatting with Alexandra Rivera. I'm Lisa Wexler. You're listening to the Accord of Science, the Accord of Scientific Excellence Award program, and Alexandra is our winner this week from Ardsley High School. So you created these samples. I'm curious to know, Alexandra, is every rock the same, or was it very important for you to select a certain kind of rock?
So, no, not every rock is the same. So, in glaciers, there exist many different types and sizes of debris. And in my project, I was only specifically looking at one type and one size. So, that was a limitation. And hopefully, in the future, I can look at different types and sizes.
And what made you choose the type and size that you did choose?
So, the rock that we used was Keyson Pro Chalk, or it was a marking chalk. It was a blue rock
chalk.
Powder. Yes.
That's a soft rock.
Yeah. So it was something that the lab technician had around in his lab. And the reason we chose it was first because of its color. It was easy to see in the sample. And second, because the size of the dust was representative of volcanic dust, which is a common debris in glaciers.
It is a common debris in glaciers. Sure, because glaciers are formed by...
Right.
How are glaciers formed, Alexander? You finish the sentence. How do we get glaciers to begin with?
Yeah, so glaciers form as snow accumulates and compresses over many years, and the debris can come into the glaciers during accumulation. So, for example, if the snow lays down on top of the glacier and then volcanic activity from volcanoes around near the glacier can also land on top of the ice. And then over time, as more snow compresses on top, this debris will be trapped inside of the ice.
Because Iceland, again, where I visited, is all volcanic. That's mm-hmm. what it is.
Right.
And if you want to go to a cool place, you should go there because it looks like you're walking on the moon in different parts of Iceland. It's incredibly cool. Mm-hmm. It's really unbelievable. We're chatting with Alexandra Rivera of Ardsley High School, who is very interested in earth science. One of the things we loved about your application, Alexandra, was that you say, I like to say that my passion for earth science comes from the fact that I was born on Earth Day.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was born on Earth Day, April 22nd.
And is it always April 22nd?
Yes.
Is it always the same?
Yeah.
Okay. And that you were always interested in earth science.
Yeah. So the first time I was really exposed to an earth science course was when I took earth science in eighth grade. And something that I really liked compared to all the other sciences that I've taken is that earth science is really hands-on. So I was able to look at the rocks and actually touch them as opposed to bio, which is more memorization. So when I entered the science research program, I knew from the beginning that I wanted to look at earth science.
We're chatting with Alexandra Rivera of Ardsley High School. When we come back, we're going to learn more about her project, why the results are significant in a world in which we are having to adapt to global warming, and what it means, what is the importance of glaciers as they're disappearing. So we'll be going to be chatting a little bit more with Alexandra Rivera. I'm Lisa Wexler. Stay tuned for the second half of the show this morning.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009. Or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they started grade 6 going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the FOCUS program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, what can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success, then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465. Or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
And welcome back. I'm Lisa Wexler. We're chatting with Alexandra Rivera of Ardsley High School. Welcome back, Alexandra.
Hi.
And you are this week's winner of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award for your research in understanding glacial flow.
Yes.
So glaciers are your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Earth science is your passion. And in this lab, where was this lab?
So it was at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, which is a research unit of Columbia University.
You created glacier samples in order to be able to look to see the melting rates of glaciers? Is that what you were looking at?
Well, I was looking more at the effect of debris or small rock or dust particles on mechanisms of glacier flow. So not necessarily melting, but how glaciers will flow.
And when you, what is the difference between, in my very simplistic mind, a glacier flowing and it melting?
So glacier flow, for example, in the middle of a glacier, it's not necessarily melting, but it's still moving because glaciers are dynamic bodies and they.
So could they literally move down a mountain but not melt?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the gravity, the heaviness of them?
Right.
On a slope?
Yeah. So there's multiple ways that glaciers move. One is, as I was explaining earlier, is called basal sliding. So that's the process of the entire glacier just sliding over the bedrock. Okay. And that can be facilitated by many different factors. For example, a layer of water that forms between the ice and the rock that will make the glacier slide faster. There are also other mechanisms of glacial movement. I mentioned earlier the other type is internal ice deformation, or this is the a process of the glacier moving internally.
Give me the big picture now in terms of where glaciers were 50 years ago and where they are now.
All right. So in a warming climate, glaciers are shrinking. And this is especially important to us because glaciers are one direct cause of sea level rise. And sea level rise poses a great risk to our world today, especially to coastal regions and coastal populations. So it is necessary that we better understand the factors affecting glacial flow in order to better predict and prepare for sea level rise.
Based on the research you've done, Alexandra, how soon is it before we're going to notice the effects of the rising sea level?
Well, based on some of the literature that I've been reading recently, they have predicted in very soon. So like in the next 10, 50 years, we could see significant changes. But it is important. We have to start learning more about it now. So it's not only my research, which looks at ice in a control laboratory setting, but all these researchers that are going out into the field, this is also important. And all our work together can come together.
It does seem as if every day we are hearing in the news of astounding discoveries about how much less ice there is, for example, in Antarctica than we thought.
Right.
About how the ice underneath has been shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very important to understand. And do we have a lot of glaciers left on the Earth?
Well, so the project that I was specifically doing it was more looking at it in a control laboratory setting. So I'm not really that knowledgeable about the amount of glaciers around the world. However, something in the future that I would like to do is try to apply what I was looking in a controlled setting more to the bigger picture. So this is something that I'll be doing in the future.
Okay, so just tell us again your hypothesis and the result of your experiment.
Right. So what I hypothesized was that ice with more debris or ice with more rock particles inside of it would flow faster. And I did find that this was the case.
You did find it was the case. Now, did you hypothesize a certain rate at which it would flow faster?
No, I did not hypothesize a certain rate. My study was really looking for trends, to see how debris will influence ice movement. But in the future, if we would like to move this more towards glacial models, looking more towards the rate and more statistical analysis will be necessary.
But then we also have to know more about the composition of the specific glacier.
Right.
Which, is that easy to find out or not so easy?
Well, I think that if you're going to an actual glacier and taking an ice core, it's relatively easy to find the amount of debris inside.
Amount of debris. Does it tend to be constant throughout?
No. So as I was saying earlier, debris is a function, like it depends on when it was accumulated. So for example, one of the studies that I had looked at when I was doing my literature review, they were looking at ice cores in Greenland and they were comparing layers of ice and the amount of debris they had in it. And one was from the Holocene ice period and the other one from Wisconsin. So two different ice
Wisconsin
periods.
Wisconsin is an ice period?
Yes.
It's not just a state where they make a lot of cheese?
Okay. So the ice from two different time periods, they had different amounts of debris in it. So it depends on the volcanic activity of the time.
And when you, after you did your research and your hypothesis proved to be true, tell us more about what you learned as a result of doing this scientific project.
Well, in addition to learning more about glaciers, which is something that I've always been interested in, something that has been really valuable about the science research experience in general is that it's introduced me to a great community. So in the lab, I was working with my mentor and also her colleagues, and it was great to like sit in the cafeteria and listen to all these people doing different and unique research and kind of joining in on those conversations.
It's very, very cool. And in terms of what it would take to determine the rate at which something melts or that it was faster than you thought, what is the math involved in presenting your research?
So I didn't really address the math as much in my research, but going further in the future, I would like to look more at debris in specifically glacial models, which is definitely much more mathematical. This is something that I will have to address.
Okay. Are you going to stick with earth science, Alexandra?
Yeah. So I'm currently applying to engineering programs in college. But
are you a senior?
Yes, I'm a senior. But I'm still thinking of maybe looking into physics or earth science as well.
That's a nice combo. Mm-hmm. So if you combine physics and earth science, you're combining the stars and the earth, right? It's like up there and down here at the same time.
Kind of, yeah.
Right. But glaciers or ice, it seems like that's what your mentor did, right?
Yes.
So in studying the ice formations and the planets, it's earth science and physics, but it's not coming from Earth. It's coming from Neptune or wherever.
Right.
Right?
So she's looking at icy satellites or the moons of Jupiter.
Okay. And taking your research about understanding the flow of glaciers and debris, what do you think would be the next step to do in terms of a wider dissemination of your results?
All right. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, something that I would like to do in the future is assess different types and sizes of debris in my samples, because debris and glaciers exist in many different types and sizes. And we needed to look at these different types and sizes in order to create a better understanding of debris on ice.
One of the things you spoke about in your paper is I had hypothesized that debris will increase frictional heating. And I found that my hypothesis was supported. So was the underlying theory that the more stuff that isn't ice within ice, that friction in and of itself creates a heat that makes the ice move faster?
Right. So what I was explaining earlier about creating my samples, so my study was composed in two phases. So the first phase, was what I was talking about earlier with creating my own samples. But the second phase is what you were referring to, which was the frictional heating. So here I used a computer model that was previously created by another member in my lab. But what I was looking at is the effect of debris on frictional heating. And frictional heating can be defined as the heat generated from ice-on-rock friction occurring at the base of a glacier. So I was looking at
So even if the temperature is the same, mm-hmm. because the rock is very cold, you're saying there's heat that's created because they're touching each other.
Right. So the amount of debris in ice, what I found is that it increases frictional heating, meaning that the ice and bedrock coming in contact, if the ice has more rock inside of it, then more heat will be generated. And this heat can therefore create more meltwater, or it's a layer of water that forms between the ice and the bedrock. And this can actually cause the glacier to move faster.
To move faster. By the way, do we know in your research, not from your primary research, but in reviewing your literature, do we know if there are any particular glaciers that are moving much more quickly than glaciers have ever moved before?
Yeah, so specifically ice streams, they move much quicker. And something actually that I was looking at in my research, in addition to just debris with respect to frictional heating, in my model, I also assessed glacial velocity. So I was looking at to see if slower glaciers or faster glaciers would create more frictional heating. And I found that faster glaciers had more frictional heating.
That would make sense, right?
Right.
They're moving faster. Mm-hmm. And by definition, they're creating more friction if they're moving faster. And by definition, that friction would make them warmer, and then they would continue to move faster.
Right.
Right? It mm-hmm. becomes its own cycle.
Yes.
We're chatting with Alexandra Rivera of Arthley High School, this week's winner of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. We ask an ethics question every year when we do these applications. And the ethics question that we asked this year, do you remember what it was?
I believe so.
Well, here's what it is. Assume you are employed as a salesperson selling a product to the general public. This product meets all legal requirements for manufacturing and has been deemed safe to use. However, it does have some flaws. Are you ethically obliged to reveal your product's flaws to a prospective customer? So what do you think?
So I think that it is anyone's responsibility to kind of be upfront with someone you're talking about. So, for example, if you're selling something that is deemed safe, but perhaps can influence, like, for example, if we're talking about medicine, right? It may be deemed safe for most people, but if, perhaps if it can affect a specific group, I think that is necessary. Like, if you're going to be selling your product to people, it is necessary that we tell them.
Because, you know, one of the things we're trying to get at the ethics question is a really important topic for every scientist. And it's one of the reasons why we want to know who the kids are. And that is the importance of honesty as a scientist in doing your work.
Yes.
Because think about it, Alexandra. How much did you have to rely on other people's work to make assumptions going forward in yours?
Right. So looking at research was something very important in my study, or I think in other people's study, because it's necessary when you're working on something to look at what other people have done and try to build on their work. And I think it's also necessary to give them credit, because specifically for the researchers that I was looking at, the literature that I was looking at, it has helped me kind of develop what my goals in my study. So it's definitely necessary to give them credit as well.
And Alexandra Rivera, Ardsley High School. So overall, you created glaciers, or at least portions of glaciers.
Ice samples.
Yeah, ice samples. And you worked with a mentor. You examined the difference between those that had debris and those that didn't have debris. You measured the rate of flow, which sometimes is the rate of melting, but sometimes it's just the rate of movement.
Right.
And you learned that if they have debris, they're going to be moving quicker.
Right.
And had that ever been studied before, as far as you know?
Yeah, so scientists have looked at the effect of debris, for example, on crystal size, and they have also found that ice with smaller crystals flows faster. So what my research was suggesting that is ice with debris may flow faster. However, if we would like to look at this more in the future and, for example, look at it more in glacial models with different types and sizes of debris, this is something that still needs to be looked further.
And you enjoyed it?
Yes, 100%.
And you're going to be doing science going forward.
Yes.
Whether it's engineering or physics or whatever it is.
Right.
You're going to stick with it.
Yes, I am.
We need you. We were reading this application, Alexandra, and we were saying to ourselves as judges, I'm the layman judge on the panel, that this is exactly the kind of science research that has to be done right now.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
We hope you
stick with it. We look forward to seeing more of your results. Alexandra Rivera, this week's winner of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. You can find out more about the award by going on Accorda.com, and you can hear this broadcast, all or any part of it you may have missed, as well as prior broadcasts on LisaWexler.com. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.